Welcome back to That's Not Proper, and I'm your host, Corey Asuncion. Recently, within some of the podcaster groups that I'm in, I had shared my fear that as time passes, and like many other significant events over the course of history, people lose their momentum and the passion of the fight dwindles, at least for some people. I had shared that I was seeking to speak with other Black podcasters on my podcast about how their feelings, thoughts, focus, and desires on these current events and moving forward without losing the momentum, what does that look like? Being a white woman with white privilege, there are many things I will not experience and do not understand, and frankly, just can't understand. And I have to educate myself. A fellow podcaster graciously responded and shared she would be open to having this discussion with me on this podcast. So I ask, as you hear this podcast episode, that you would be willing to listen with an open heart and mind, with a desire to seek unity, but also the desire to seek change within yourself, and realize that we need to keep this momentum going, that it doesn't just end today or tomorrow or at the polls in November. But this is a battle that we are all involved in, and that we really need to consider what we need to do to change within ourselves and our communities and our families. So today we're doing things a little bit different. I'm going to run a bit of a different format. Some of you may have heard of Switch the Mic or Share the Mic. This is where I, a white woman and podcaster, will be relinquishing my platform to center a Black woman's voice, experiences, work, and efforts. Luann Moses is a mother and wife, a fellow podcaster, business owner, author, all that, as well as having a full-time job as a victims advocate. And today she will be discussing the importance and need of allyship. Luann, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Corey. I am glad to be here today.
I don't know if everybody knows this, but well, you just recently released an episode that we recorded several months ago. But initially we met on a podcasting group on Facebook. I think that's where we first
met each other.
Yeah. And that was before pandemic, or right at the beginning of pandemic.
It was right at the beginning, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And we did the little Zoom chit chat thing and had a really good time with that. But as I said, so today I am handing over my platform to you, in a sense, where you are going to lead me and lead my listeners and to understanding of allyship. The concern that I had shared within that group was the fear of losing momentum, the fear of watching people be pumped up for this today, but when it starts to die out, when November especially is over and the polls are closed and everybody's done talking about this, I don't want it to dwindle out again. And so I hand this over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Corey. I am so glad to be here with your audience today. And I think it's really great to have this conversation around allyship and then also the momentum, because that is one of the concerns that I have as well. In conversations that I've had with people, I mean, if we look at things right now, I mean, it's great. Everyone's pumped up. Everyone's rallying around together. You see protests with people of all different shades, all different colors. There is really strong allyship that is forming right now as it comes to racial injustice and oppression. But the one thing that we are good for and good at doing in America is when something is not a media sensation anymore, because I mean, the media really does lead the forefront to a lot of this, which is a whole nother conversation. But when something is not a trending topic or the media is not talking about it, it kind of falls by the wayside until the next incident happens. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, right now we have people that are using their voices. There's like such a show of unity. And to really keep that going, I mean, it's really going to take the conversations like you and I are starting right now with this allyship, sharing the platforms, things of that nature, to really keep this going, because it's going to be up to the people that once the media finds another hot topic to talk about, once social media finds another trend to talk about, it's going to be up to the people that are on the ground that are impacted by this or want to help make a difference, to really keep the conversations going and really do this work that for so long has been oppressed. I mean, we're talking about oppression, but I mean, if we think about it, talking about race, talking about politics, talking about religion, those have always been taboo subjects. Mm. I know when I was growing up, it was, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. From your end
those
as
were,
well.
Those were not allowed conversations. It was like, everybody knew you don't talk religion and politics, especially right. Not at the dinner table or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And those are things that in America, it's just been, no one ever talks about it. And mm-hmm. why? Because people get upset, people get uncomfortable, feelings and emotions get involved. So instead of ruffling feathers, what do? We just decide not to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And what I think what we're seeing now happen with everything that's happening with racial injustice, police brutality, oppression, mm-hmm. things of that nature, that we're seeing the result of not having that conversation. Mm-hmm. So everything's been suppressed. No one's talking about it. But now we're in the area of social media, the era of social media, to where things are being recorded. People can't hide behind, you go to work, you go home, you do whatever you do. You can't hide behind it anymore because it's exposed. It's on the forefront. Mm-hmm. And it's this major like outcry right now, outrage as to all the racism and things that are happening. But Black people have been experiencing this behind closed doors or in isolated incidences forever. It's just that it hasn't been on a mainstream platform or in the public eye. Mm-hmm. And now that it's in the public eye, now people are talking about it. Now people are focused on it. But it's really nothing new. It's just there was desegregation, there were civil rights, and everything was supposed to go perfect, and everyone has equal rights, and we don't talk about it anymore.
Right.
But unfortunately, that wasn't the experience. That hasn't been the experience. But because we didn't talk about it, we were able to have that Band-Aid on it. Mm-hmm. But as we see, when certain things happen, when certain decisions are made, such as administration changes, presidential changes, and things of that nature become outright, then it's kind of like putting a battery pack or a power pack into people that may have racist views. Mm-hmm. They feel empowered to go ahead and express these views because from the highest leadership point, you're seeing certain biases, certain privileges, certain racism, certain stereotypes just come from that high standard. So it's like, okay, if that person can do it, then I can do it also.
Right.
And I think that's what really has started to transcend over these past few years that has led us to the point that we're at today where it's really like spiraling out of control. And how do we get a handle on it?
I agree. The spiraling out of control is an accurate depiction or way to describe that, because that's what it looks like to me. And as a white person, I'm seeing this in the media, but I haven't had to experience it in real life. So like you said, I'm seeing this now in the media. It's all over. You cannot ignore it right now. That's the interesting thing to me, is it cannot be ignored. However, for the past however many years, we can go back 400 years, we could go back, you know, to 92 with Rodney King, we can go back to the 60s with the Watts riots. Those things occurred, yes, and we saw these laws change or different things change. And so as a white person, we think, or at least I know that that's what I would assume all white people think, is, oh, everything's okay now, because right. We don't have to experience the day today stuff that has continued on from there till now.
Right. And that's the thing. When there's legislation made, when there are certain rulings that come into play, I mean, it's natural to think, because you don't walk that experience. You're not a Black person in America. So from your angle, okay, these riots happened, this happened, they put this legislation in place, so all is well, everything is okay. But that is not how people are living. Mm-hmm. And that is not the reality of experiences. And I mean, I can say from my angle that it was much more covered up when I would say I was growing up than it is outright at this point. And maybe we can attribute that to social media and people recording stuff and putting it online. I think that plays a big part in it, because we have phones, we have everything, and it doesn't take much for things to go viral at this point. And it's really starting to open that lens. So now it seems out of control because it's popping up everywhere. And it's right. like, is it really spiraling out of control? I mean, that's the natural assumption. It's like, is it spiraling out of control or has it always been like this? But because we all live in our bubbles and are focused on our everyday lives and we've all been so busy that we don't see it unless it directly impacts us. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's occurring at the time of this pandemic that's really putting more eyes on the racial injustice, on the police brutality, on the oppression, because people don't have anything to do mm-hmm. but sit at home. You can't go out and do anything. I mean, things are starting to open back up, but for the most part, you have the TV, you have your phone, you're on social media because there's not much to do in life. So people are consuming it. We're taking it all in. And what I don't want to see happen is once things return back to life as normal, mm-hmm. we just go back to, okay, that was that. It was a trend. It's over. So, I mean, really, these conversations here, like we're having right now to kind of start these conversations, give those tips, give some walking, talking points and action steps. That's really how I would like to approach it, because I feel that we can talk about all day about what white people are doing, what black people are doing, what this person should be doing, mm-hmm. what that person should be doing. I mean, it's a lot of finger pointing, a lot of blame game. People have their opinions. And I mean, even though the two of us are having this open conversation right now, there are many people out there who still don't get it. Mm-hmm. Like when you holler Black Lives Matter, we hear all lives matter. Right. And it's like, just because we're saying Black Lives Matter, that's not saying that all lives don't matter. It's just the fact of Black people are standing up saying that, hey, we are people too. At one point in time, we were thought of as property. We were less than a human being, things of that nature. But civil rights and everything happened. We're supposed to have these equal rights, equal access. And that hasn't been our experience. We haven't been treated fairly by the justice systems, by all types of systems. We face that systemic oppression. And it's just by taking that stand, that empowerment stand of saying Black Lives Matter, it's not discounting any other race. It's just saying that we want to be seen in the light and treated in the light that everyone else is treated. Because why, due to the color of our skin, should we be treated any differently? And I think that's the big misconception that comes with the whole Black Lives Matters movement and that stand is that everyone wants to justify it as, well, all lives matter. Okay, we didn't say all lives didn't matter, but how can you stand and say all lives matter when you constantly see videos, everything, news stories, experiences that are out there to where you would know as a white person or someone of a different color that if you were in that situation, more than likely, you would have walked out alive. Mm-hmm. So we really can't say all lives matter, because when we're put in the same situation, there are two drastically different outcomes.
Right.
And that's really like the underlying part of the Black Lives Matter is that we just want that same experience. So if we're both going to be arrested for something, I want to live the same way that you're going to live.
I think that... It's so weird to me that it has to even be said. I understand why it has to be said. I mean, it makes absolute sense. But just like from just as a human being, it grieves me that you would even have to request that. My life matters, and that grieves me. And again, because I don't have that same experience, there's probably a part of it too that I kind of go, why do we have to say that? That's so weird. Why would someone have to say my life matters? Well, because I don't have the same experience. Because right. when I step out into the world and go about my day-to-day life, when I go running, when I'm sleeping, you know, when I go to a store, I don't run the risk of dying. I just don't.
Right.
And so where do we go from here? How do we keep this going? It's a fear of mine, is seeing everybody excited now and caught up in that. And it makes me think of in 92 with the Rodney King riots. I was 19 years old. I just had a baby. And when the rioting happened then, and it was a huge deal. There's a lot of things, like I'll see photos from that time versus photos from now, and it looks very similar. It's almost like you're looking at the same photos in some aspects.
Yes.
And I go, but what happened? What happened? Why did we think everything was, it was done? Why did we think it was all okay? Why do I think that everything was all okay?
And I think because back then there wasn't this exposure, there wasn't, we have the Gen Z, as they call them, the Gen Z who are recording everything, putting everything out there. I mean, we didn't have that. So it was so easy back in the 90s to see these Rodney King and see the riots that happened and everything that played out to that point. But then we all went back to our bubbles because it wasn't out there. It wasn't seen. It wasn't shown everywhere. But now we're in the generation, in the time and age where it's constantly in your face. So you really have no choice but to see it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the major difference that we're seeing now, is that there's the light shine, there's the exposure. So I think from here, the way that we keep this kind of momentum going, the way that we kind of start to make progress, I mean, I'm going to say I'm no expert and I can't speak for all Black people. And that is one thing that I think when we have conversations, a lot of times there are white people that want one Black person to speak for all Black people. Okay, I can't speak for all Black people. I can just speak from my experience. Mm-hmm. So from my opinion and my point of view, I mean, first step, like I said, is are these conversations right here? It's where we're taking a Black person and a white person and we're having the uncomfortable conversation. Mm-hmm. Because it's not to say that you're wrong because you're white, or I'm wrong because I'm Black, or you're right and I'm right. It's the fact of putting these two completely different life experiences together and talking through the tough issues. Because I think once we sit down and start talking through these tough issues, then I can help educate you. You can share your point of view with me. Then we walk away as two enlightened individuals. And then if we think about with COVID that's happening right now, where they say if you have contact with one person, then you can spread it to them. And then whoever they have contact with, they can spread it to somebody else. So why can't we start thinking about having conversations about racial equity and equality and things of that nature from that same lens?
Right.
To where if two people are sitting down having a conversation and you walk away enlightened, then you're most likely going to go share what you learned with somebody else. I'm going to go share what I learned. And then it's the hope that we have that trickle down effect to where we're starting to plant those seeds so that understanding can be developed on different levels. It may not be something big right away, but the more we start to peel back the layers, the more we have the conversations, the more we put different perspectives together, we're most likely going to go out and say, hey, this is what I learned today when talking with Luan, or this is what I learned when talking with Corey. And then it's going to spread from there. So why can't the positivity and the education and the learning spread the same way that everything else spreads? And that's the way that I view one step, is to just have these conversations to start planting those seeds of understanding. Mm-hmm. So then when you're educated from your perspective, you're like, there's a lot that you don't understand as a white woman. Mm-hmm. But if there are parts of my conversation that you take away from me, then when you hear someone that perhaps says something and you're like, hey, wait, I learned different, then more than likely you'll speak up and say, well, that's not the case.
Right.
This is actually what's going on. And I think that's a small scale. Yeah. I mean, that's a small scale of how to start.
It's so silly that something so simple makes a huge amount of sense. Like you said, with regards to COVID, I love that you compared it to that, by the way, because that's exactly what it is that trickle down of sharing experiences and understanding. I mean, it actually makes me think of thousands of years ago. That's how cultures continued, with sharing the stories and experiences with one another so that it could be learned and passed down generations forward. So what, as far as allyship, what is allyship?
Okay, so to be an ally, that is really, and I looked up a definition, so I'll give a definition of it. So by definition, it's someone who actively promotes and aspires to advance the culture of inclusion through intentional, positive, and conscious efforts that benefit people as a whole. So that's the long way to say that as an ally, you are educating yourself and then you're making an active decision to not remain silent. Mm. So an ally is someone that has taken the position of, one, recognizing that there are injustices, there are inequalities, there are oppressions, things that exist in the world. And as we say, we'll start right now, a great place to talk about white privilege, because I think when people hear the word white privilege, there's automatically this negative thought to it. Mm-hmm. Because we're labeling it as white privilege, it's automatically, oh, I don't have white privilege. like people think it's this negative thing. And it's like, no, it's not a negative thing. It's just shining the light on the fact that because of the color of your skin, you'll have a certain privilege over me. You'll have a certain better standing. Your voice will be heard more, things of that nature, simply because of how you look and your life experiences. That doesn't mean that it's a negative thing. It's all about how you use that privilege that's then going to determine whether it's a negative or a positive. Mm-hmm. So you can have white privilege and choose to use your privilege to help those that look different from you. Or you can take your white privilege and choose to have that kind of white supremacist attitude of hate, racism, and kind of flex that muscle to where, oh, I'm better, superior. And then that turns into white supremacy. So we're not saying that white privilege and white supremacy, they're two completely different things. And I think that is an understanding that needs to be had when there's a talk of white privilege. I think when people hear that, it's automatically, oh, it has to be something negative. Mm-hmm. And it's really not. Yeah. So when you're becoming an ally, you're recognizing that, yes, I have a certain privilege. So I have this privilege. Okay, now what can I do? You're going to start recognizing, okay, everyone has biases, no matter if you're white, black, whomever, you're going to have a bias. You have to start kind of checking your own biases and knowing what your biases are and then kind of fact checking them to what the reality is. And then once you start to understand like the truths and get your biases in check, then you're able to, in family and friend situations, because I know a lot of white ally friends of mine who kind of challenge their family and friends' norm, and it's really an uncomfortable situation to be in. But to stand up as an ally is a person that has started to see things through a different light, and then they're able to go into their communities, into their homes, their family, and start to educate those around them as to the power that you have as a white person in America, and how if you use that power to help those that do not have that same power, we could really start to make a difference and all starting to work together. I mean, it's just you're willing to stand in the forefront, even if you're not protesting, whatever it is, you're just taking that stand to say, this is who I am, and I am going to support this cause, this initiative. And I mean, an allyship can cross over into so many different areas, but for the purpose of this conversation, we're talking about it in terms of race. And
mm-hmm. when you said something about talking to families, I total honesty right now, obviously I'm white. So that means all my family on my side, for the most part, is white. And I actually have, because of COVID, there's some family members I haven't seen, and we don't really do a lot of communication. And I actually am like, okay, these conversations are going to have to happen. And I hate admitting that I'm a little afraid, because in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm afraid to have this conversation. Yet here's my sister, LaJuan, who has to live her life, and her sons have to live their life, and her husband's living, and her children in fear. And I'm afraid to have this conversation with this family member. And anyhow, it's humbling, you know?
It's definitely uncomfortable. I mean, I know people that have strained family relationships or lost friendships. They block family and friends on social media because they've taken that stand of allyship, and they have some family, some friends that just don't get it. But they've chosen to walk in that discomfort. And the way, and you broke it down greatly, because as an ally, it's going to be uncomfortable at first, or since I'm not an ally, I can't say how long it's uncomfortable, but you broke it down in a great way to say that you're experiencing that discomfort, that fear, whatever your emotions you're feeling right now, but it's a choice that you have. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it from a Black person's perspective, we don't have that choice. We're walking around in fear, in discomfort, worried about our family, our sons, our husbands, brothers, things of that nature, who, because of their mere presence, they're seen as a threat.
Right.
And that is a discomfort, a fear, and anxiety that we have to live with every time they walk out the house. Because there was one point in time where we could tell our kids and tell our family that, okay, if you just do what you're supposed to do, then you'll make it home safe. If you get pulled over by a cop, you comply, you'll make it home safe. But how often have we seen now that that is not the case? It's been recorded over and over again. So really, it's just this constant fear, constant anxiety of praying that they don't encounter someone who doesn't know them in the neighborhood or get pulled over by a police officer that is not the best police officer, and then they don't make it home. Mm. That's a discomfort that we live with every day.
Right.
And that's not a choice that we have. But I mean, allies, you do have the choice whether you want to start working towards becoming an ally and live in that discomfort and hope to educate those around you, or just to do nothing.
So practically speaking, and I'm really being cautious about my words, because I know that it is not your responsibility to educate me. And I want to make that clear that I know this and I understand this. So that you taking this time with me today to say I appreciate it really isn't sufficient, because you do not have to do this. And so the fact that you chose to do this and have been willing and open, I appreciate it more than I could possibly convey to you. But
I'm
know that I have.
I could do it.
Thank you. I know that there's listeners that don't know what to do. The type of person I am, I'll dig and Google and read, and I'm following content creators or whatever it is. But I know that not everybody is like that. And so rather than being, especially someone who has white privilege, and freezing and doing nothing, what can they practically be doing outside of just conversations with family to be an ally instead of being, you know, frozen in their privilege and just continuing to benefit from it?
And before I answer that question, I did want to touch on what you said when you first started asking me the question, where you said you were watching the words and were trying to think of words to say. And I think that's where a lot of us get caught up, because we want to make sure that we say the right words so that we don't offend or don't say the wrong thing. But I think there's really no way to know if you, quote unquote, say the wrong thing, unless you say it. Because I mean, no one is, and I tell people this all the time, no one gets it right 100% of the time. But it's through taking that effort that you may say something, and then I could say, oh, well, that's not the best way to say it, or things of that nature. I mean, I know it's not coming from any ill will or ill intention, but it's just having to educate. So I think the more that we say the things to try and find those right words, and they may not be the right words, then perhaps someone could educate and bring awareness to maybe a better way to say it. That's a part right there to allyship, is starting to gain that understanding. But to answer your question about practical ways, I mean, one thing that I suggest, and one thing that I've heard from my white ally friends, is they've read the book White Fragility. Now, I haven't personally read the book, but from what I hear, this book is dynamic, and it really has helped them in their allyship journey. So that may be a great place to start in understanding. I mean, another thing that I tell people is to, you can support or donate to a cause. I mean, there are lots of causes out there that are working on behalf of the Black community and things of that nature. So if you're one that is not, that's going to be out there protesting or trying to make changes to laws and things of that nature, then look into those organizations that are doing those type of things, to where you can support, make a donation, volunteer, things of that nature. That's a practical step that you could also take. And I mean, and another part is the whole, like we said, having the conversations and really using your privilege to speak up and stand up. Because I mean, how many times, like, there's that bystander effect, to where we may see something happen, but we think that someone else is going to speak up about it.
Right. That's what I meant by the frozen, just standing there.
Right. Yeah. We see something happen and we're like, okay, I see it happening, but I'm not going to say anything. And that's what you just said about being frozen. But it may take you to be that person, be that ally that stands up and says, hey, that's not right. Or now, I'm not saying like with police, because I've seen some videos where people are like confronting police when they're doing, like, not that level of extreme. I mean, there are, I would say, boundaries that you should operate within. But on a smaller scale, like, for instance, if you're in line somewhere where this has happened to people that I know, there may be a Black person that's waiting, and they're specifically overlooked to the white person that's behind them or next to them, speaking up and saying, hey, they were here before me, don't you think you should serve them? Like, things of that nature. I think when people think of allyship, they think on that bigger scale of, I have to be out here
writing new laws, confronting
police, doing things of that nature. But it's really something that small as if you're both in the same situation and they're overlooked for whatever, just speaking up and saying, hey, they were here before me. I think that you should be serving them first.
You mean treating other people that don't look like you like a human?
Exactly.
You know, that's what that sounds like to me. And I appreciate, by the way, you sharing that with regards to knowing that I'm going to make a mistake. I said that because I hate messing up anything. It doesn't matter what it is. I do not like to do things wrong. So, I mean, I don't think anybody does, but I like really hate it. And so
I agree.
You know, and I also am deeply grieved if I hurt someone. And so I would never want to hurt or offend. And so there are times where I'm certain that I am too cautious and maybe I am losing groundwork there because I'm just too tiny baby steps around or eggshells around the situation. I had a question about white fragility, and you might be able to help me on this. I have heard, obviously, we've all seen all over the place that book being suggested, and I personally have not read it yet. I think I read some excerpts. One thing I had read was that a lot of people were suggesting not to purchase it because it was written by a white author. And so I had been looking at some other books, and just out of curiosity, what is your feeling with regards to that?
I personally, now I may upset black people, I may upset white people by saying this, but from my perspective, I would look at that the same way as where we say a mom can't teach a boy how to be a man.
Okay.
So we can be the best mom that we could be, but there are certain things about being a man that we don't know. So I would look at that book being written by a white woman. To me, that's a good thing because as a white woman, she knows what privileges she has. She knows how to address these privileges and to best use them. As you said before, when we were talking, that it's not my job to kind of educate you on how to be an ally and things of that nature. And to flip that, how can I effectively teach you how to be an ally if I'm the person that's living in the experience and not having to be an ally? Right. So I feel that the best person to teach someone to be an ally would be an ally. So the fact that it's written by a white woman and she's able to put these words together, and from what I've heard from other white women, they've got a lot from it. I think that is really great. I mean, there are different ways and interpretation as to why people may say not to buy that book, but to really get inside of a white person's experience, I think it would have to come from a white person.
That makes excellent sense. Thank you. I appreciate that, by the way, because there's so much information right now on social media and in the news, and some of it feels conflicting. You know, one moment it's do this, and then the next it's no, don't do that, do this, and then the next it's no, don't do that, do go back to doing. And so there's, like I said, where I get concerned about hurting someone. That's part of what causes me to get a little walking on eggshells. Right. And I appreciate that idea that making errors is part of growth.
Yes.
And so that it's truly important. If you were to be able to say, look, this is what allyship is not. These are the things. Don't do this. What would you say?
And I think that we've touched on this throughout the conversation. But as I said before, and I just said it when talking about the book, that you can't expect a black person or black people to teach you about how to be an ally. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing. Don't look to us to have all the answers on this is exactly what you should be doing as an ally. I can give the tips. I can give the suggestions. I can point you in the right direction of tools, but I can't actually show you what allyship is because I'm not white. I can just tell you from my perspective what it is and things you can do. But in terms of putting it into play and being effective, that would come from forming with other white allies to really figure out how you can best make a difference. Mm-hmm. And then also, as I said earlier, don't expect that one black person to speak for all black people. I think as an ally, your best bet is to look and listen to the different thought leaders and people that are out there speaking about the injustices, the oppression, and really glean from each of those the best information that you can, because there are many different experiences. Even as Black people in America, we don't all have the same experience. Someone living in the inner city is going to have different experiences than a Black person that's lived in the suburbs their whole life. So there are so many different angles to the Black experience that it would really be an injustice to Black people as a whole if you were looking to that one person to speak and teach and educate you on allyship on behalf of all Black people. Because what I'm saying it is may be different from what someone else is saying.
Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, are you sick of talking about all of this yet?
I'm not, because I come from an education, like I believe in education and awareness. Mm-hmm. So I don't take it, like I don't hold on to the emotional part of it. I guess because I do a lot of education and training in my business and in my work that I am big on getting the information out to people.
Okay.
So in my opinion, and also for my full-time job, I also do a lot of work with social justice. So I'm on a committee where we're always talking about social justice and forming all types of trainings and things of that nature to kind of get to that point where, not just in race, but in all areas, that there's equitable access, equitable resources, and that we really have equity over equality in America. So because that's a passion of mine, and because I believe in educating and awareness, I'm not tired of talking about it. But I will give myself those breaks. So if I don't want to have a conversation, I'm not going to book a podcast interview. I'm not going to go on social media and talk about it. I'm not going to share about it. I'm going to allow myself that time to disconnect. But I think that there is a place for Black people to stand up and just keep talking about it, because we have the power right now. America is shining the light on supporting Black businesses, supporting Black people. Our voice is being heard, to me, at a level that it probably has never been heard before. So I think it would be an injustice for me to say I'm tired of talking about it, because now is a time when people want to listen. So as long as people want to listen, I'm going to keep talking and sharing about it.
Well, I appreciate that, because I was considering you, especially this morning before I was getting ready for this podcast. And in my mind, I'm thinking, gosh, Scott, is she sick of this yet? Because not only is it the topic of all conversation right now, but truly this is your life. And it has been for the entirety of your life. And so I appreciate that you've done this. Again, I'm probably going to say it 100 times. I really, really, really want to make it clear that I truly appreciate that you're doing this with me. There was one thing you and I talked about actually before we started recording. Well, one of the things. And a lot of my listeners are moms. A large portion of them are moms. And one thing you had said recently in one of your podcast episodes was that motherhood is universal. And that sounds so simple, but it really struck a chord with me. Mm-hmm. Because yes, you have, how many children do you have, Luan?
I have three.
You have three
children. Yes.
And so, yes, motherhood, the aspects of motherhood and the struggles, there is a universal aspect to that. But could you like expound on that a little bit for me as far as what your experience is and what you're seeing?
Yes. So I do believe that motherhood as a whole, it is universal, because there are a lot of common themes that all moms are going to experience. That feeling of not having time for yourself, the mom guilt, all those things that we could just run down a list of. So as a whole, motherhood is universal. But when we get down to the core of it, there are many different experiences of mothers. And we can even say from single mothers to married mothers, Black mothers and white mothers. I mean, there are a lot of different aspects to it. So when I was speaking on my podcast about motherhood and how there are many aspects that are universal, there are also things that as a Black mother in America that a white mother is not going to have to experience. So as Black mothers in America, we're telling our children, okay, if you're in a group of predominantly white friends and you're the only Black person in there, make sure you're doing everything that you're supposed to do, because if something happens, the finger's going to get pointed at you. And that's not something that our kids would really think about. They just think they're out having fun with their friends. But because of us knowing, especially if it's a Black boy with a whole lot of white boys, we're knowing in our minds as parents that if something happens, the Black boy's going to get the blame. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to the kids, they're like, oh, I'm just out hanging with my friends. It's like, no, that may be your experience. But if you encounter a system, law enforcement, things of that nature, you're automatically going to have the finger pointed at you. Mm. Or the fact of, we're telling our kids, when you go into the store, make sure you get a bag, make sure you get a receipt. Because, I mean, these days, people are like, do you want your receipt? Do you want a bag? I mean, I've had my son say no, he don't. Oh, yes, you do. And they're like, why? Because you want to have that bag and have the proof that you purchased it. You're not going to walk out of store with something in your hand for somebody to stop and tell you that you didn't pay for something. So you make sure you get a receipt. You make sure you get a bag whenever you have a purchase. And even the fact of when our children are younger and our sons, and I said this on my podcast, when they're younger, one day they're cute, they're so adorable, everyone loves them. And then there's a certain point where they go from that cute and adorable to now their mere presence is a threat. And it's like, as a mother, how do you know when your child goes from that cute, adorable phase to being a threat? And that is something that white mothers and other mothers don't have to think about. Mm-hmm. The mere presence of a black male being a threat. Yeah. I mean, they have the experiences where they get onto the elevator and people will clutch their purses or people will cross over the street if we're walking down the street. Those are experiences when I say that motherhood is different because we're having these conversations behind closed doors. We're educating our children. We're even now in the days of police brutality and all, it's a whole different conversation of, okay, make sure you have your registration and your insurance in reach, in plain sight. Turn on all the lights as soon as you get pulled over, especially if it's dark outside. Turn on all the lights. Make sure your hands are visible. Have everything within plain sight so that you don't have to be reaching or pointing for something. Talk through every action that you're doing and just make sure that you're complying because we're trying to give them the tools to make sure that they make it home. And it's like, it's still scary because who's to say that if they do turn on all the lights, if they have everything in plain sight, we still can't guarantee that they won't be killed. And that's the scary part when you're talking about being a black mother in America during these times.
How are your children dealing with that?
It's definitely sparked a lot of conversation. I mean, my son, we've had the conversation with him for as long as I can remember. So I think that he has adapted and adjusted to it. So it's not a big culture shock to him. Mm-hmm. It's just really reinforcing those things. I mean, my daughters have definitely kind of opened their eyes to a lot of things. So there's definitely a lot of conversation. I mean, it's on TikTok, it's on Instagram, it's on all the social media platforms. It's really brought an awareness to being black in America. Mm-hmm. And you're having these conversations with kids. I mean, my daughters are almost 11 and 13, so they're not that young. But it's like there are things that we didn't have to, or at least I know I didn't really have to think about that they're thinking about right now and conversations that they're having. And it's to the point where it's like you don't want to have these conversations all the time, but yet you don't want to cut off their voice. But what I do try to do is make sure they disconnect and they're not constantly absorbing it because it's so easy to get caught up in all that negativity and everything that's happening that it can start to consume you. But I mean, I like that it's providing that platform for education. And I mean, I have daughters that are outspoken who are like, it's not fair that just because of the color of my skin that I'm being treated a certain way or people view us a certain way. And it's like, yes, it's not fair, but this is your reality. So because this is the reality, this is how we have to deal with it.
I hate that. I mean, it's accurate. It's right. Just, it makes me think there are times where I was throughout all of this, when you're seeing these videos, I wondered, well, what if someone rose up in that moment? What if someone knocked that cop off of George Floyd's neck? Or what if he fought back in this situation in a way that he could have overpowered that cop? But then realistically, I go, oh, wait, no, that would have made it worse. It would have made it worse. So it's, what do you do? You know, you're just in a catch.
Catch-22. It is. Yeah. And it really, I mean, especially, and I think with the George Floyd situation, it really had such an impact because people, America, everyone was able to witness someone that was complying, doing everything that he was supposed to do. Yes, he may have had a counterfeit $20 bill, whatever that call that initiated the police response, but He was in handcuffs. He was wanting to go to jail. Like, okay, he's not fighting. And everyone witnessed this on video to where the life was taken from his body. And what could he have done? He was already in handcuffs. He was complying. Take me to jail. He's begging, crying for his mom, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And when America has to sit back and everyone sees this, it really brings that point of view of, okay, this black man really did everything that we have been justifying to ourselves as white people. Well, if they would have just did this, well, if they would have just did that, then maybe they wouldn't get killed. But now you're seeing where this person did what you probably would have said that the past people should have done, and it still ended in the same result. And I think that's why it was such a blow and it sparked so much conversation, because for once it couldn't be justified away.
It's crazy to me that anyone thinks that anyone needs to die. You're seeing all this, and like you said, you hear people saying that, well, if they would have done this, or if they would have obeyed, or if they, you know, would have, whatever, put their hands up, whatever the situation is, especially when you're talking about situations where the person's done actually nothing wrong. There's no real reason for them to have maybe been pulled over or to be questioned. I think as a white person, they would typically go, what the hell do you want? I haven't done anything wrong. Why, if they were even approached anyhow. I mean, talk about the fact that they're probably not even approached in the same way anyway.
Right.
But that we can actually hear people say, well, if he just would have been quiet, maybe he wouldn't be dead. I don't understand why we are hearing these things. I mean, like, it just makes so zero sense to me. So because he didn't like this, or because he fought back, or because he said, no, that's not the truth, or because while his body was being contorted in a way that was horribly painful and he couldn't stay in that pain because nobody could, he deserves to die? That makes zero sense to me.
Right. It makes no sense to me at all. And I think that is just, again, me speaking from my opinion, that is how people try to make it make sense in their brain. So some people don't want to confront the fact of having the privilege, or confront the fact that police brutality is a thing, that racial injustice is a thing. Some people don't want to have to look in the mirror at their white privilege or the history and things of that nature. Some people are better off being ignorant. They don't want to be educated. So to live in that ignorance, to not be educated, then we have to try and justify it. And I think anyone watching that video and saying, well, if he would have did X, Y, and Z, or if in another video I'm watching, if he wouldn't have ran away from the police officer, he wouldn't have been killed. Things of that nature. It's an attempt to justify it so then I don't have to deal with it, because right. I'm going to make it make sense in my brain. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's right, but that's my way of not having to confront and deal with what is actually going on in America.
Mm. Well, Luan, I just want to thank you again. I'm going to say it 100 times for taking this time. You did not have to, and your time is of great value. And I thank you for spending it here with me today. Is there anything else you want to add?
I just say that at the end of the day, I'm big on love. So it's all about, it's not really black versus white, because there have been so many conversations. It's not black versus white. It's not everyone just pointing the finger and saying, white people need to do this, you should have been doing that, X, Y, and Z. At the end of the day, it's about everyone against racism. Mm-hmm. So if you have love, if you have just any peace, things of that nature inside of you, then you should really want to be getting behind these movements, because you wanted to, if you're in a position to take a stand against racism, then view it as everyone against racism. Love versus hate. And in the end, I would really love to see love prevail.
Thank you. I agree. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything with me today. I appreciate you.
Thank you. And I thank you for giving me this platform and really opening up the mic and switching the mic and just giving me the platform to share. And I mean, it's through conversations like this that we can hope to evoke change.
Thank you so much for listening in to today's episode of That's Not Proper. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review That's Not Proper on whichever podcast platform you are listening on. You can also connect with me on Instagram and Facebook at That's Not Proper, as well as my website, thatsnotproper.com. If you are interested in connecting with LaJuan, I will be including all of her contact information and social media pages and her website in the show notes. And remember, please listen in next week to next week's episode of That's Not Proper.